Okay, before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're reading from the Sparkly book, it's page 393, the first full paragraph. In the second edition, it's page 344, paragraph 14. In the first edition, it is page 320, the second full paragraph. If you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 165, the second full paragraph. And if you're reading from the CIMS edition, it is page 330, paragraph 56. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. So it says in the Bible, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That's the description of being. That is the description of creation. But I'm going to play around a little bit, and I'm going to say, but then a mist went up from the ground, and a new creation, a second creation, took place. And that which describes this second creation goes like this. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with man, and the Word was man. This difference describes what could be called the fall. It describes what we've been discussing in terms of one getting a divorce from his father. One disowning his source, his father. And doing it by means of a relationship with another holy Son of God. A relationship in which these two holy sons of God both decide that they would like to be the deciders of what everything is and what everything means. Unlike God, however, they had to make decisions and definitions about things that were already made. They were not in a position of creating, we'll say, from scratch, as God does. And so, in their agreement as to mutual definitions and meanings of everything, they created not a holy relationship, but a special relationship, which we've been discussing at length, but not quite in the way that I'm discussing it right now. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with man, and the Word was man. And the land of man was a land of orphanages, because all of its inhabitants were and are orphans. At least until they decide to revoke the divorce they put in place. And of course, we're talking about undoing the divorce, aren't we? We're talking about practicing the holy instant. We're talking about withdrawing from the mutual agreement with another son or daughter of God and silencing the commitment that each of us, each of you bring, the commitment each of you brings to the definitions and meanings you have made up. And in the absence of that commitment, reaching out to the Father, reaching out to the Holy Spirit, reaching out to that which knows and apparently is beyond you, and inquiring to know what the truth is. Now, there's something else about this that needs to be illuminated. I have in the past shared at some length about the fact that being, existing, is all mental. That everything that is being experienced is some aspect of mind. It isn't just that it is mental, it is that every aspect of creation that you are experiencing has its source in the infinite mind, which is God. And God's capacity to be the bringing forth, be the impetus for the uncovering of unlimited and infinite vitally interesting things to be conscious of, which constitute life, which constitute absolutely everything that is available to you to experience. And you, as part of His creation, have the function to fulfill, which amounts to joining Him in acknowledgement of what He has created, in acknowledgement of the reality of absolutely everything that you're experiencing, without in any way losing the conscious awareness that all of it is mind. And everything that is being experienced is an experience of ideas. You are the experience of that mind in motion, in action, that is God. You're not God. But you are the experience of that mind which God is in action, and your function is to confirm it as what it is. In this experience, you are absolutely infinite. You are not encapsulated or confined in any way to anything. You are infinite. But when the mist went up from the ground. When two brothers, or a brother and a sister, or two sisters, joined together and said, "We want to decide what things are, and we want to determine what their meaning is, and we will join together in agreement about those meanings and definitions. And our joining together will constitute a bond that is as absolute as our divinity," you see, because still there is an experience of being divine. And then the moment the commitment is brought into play for this mutual agreement that such and such a thing is true, that isn't true at all because it's a different meaning and a different definition applied to one of God's creations. The minute that commitment occurred, something happened, and I've said it before. The infinite view was lost. The infinite experience of being in which all of creation is fully, constantly, and totally available to every single son and daughter of God as a conscious experience, in which there is no privacy, but there is infinite fullness of awesomely, utterly meaningful being, that was suddenly snapped away in that decision to join together, to say that something was true that wasn't true, and commit to it. And suddenly the infinite view was lost. And because every idea of God does have that which identifies it, renders it experienceable, that of each of the sons and daughters of God that specifically identified them became to them their abode, the place they occupied. They found themselves not to be experiencing all of creation within them, but they experienced themselves suddenly to be in a form, even though they were still infinite and could never truly be confined to the form that they found themselves now bound to, which they call their body. This is very important. It's important because it adds to the meaning of the special relationship and the holy instant. It adds to your understanding. How? Well, for example, we've talked about how to practice the holy instant, that it's a matter of hesitating in the middle of your daily activities, where everything you are experiencing is constituted of meanings you have put in place in your mind, and others have educated you to put in place in your mind. It's a moment in which you hesitate and abandon validating those meanings and definitions. And you reach out beyond your present mentality, I'll say, mode of thinking, mode of identifying yourself. And you reach out beyond that to that which you've come to understand is infinite still and never stopped being infinite. And you ask, "Father, what is the meaning here? What is the truth here from your perspective, outside of the tininess of the definitions I've created and adopted and confined myself to?" You see? Now, what I want you to understand at this point in the exposition of the meaning of the holy instant and of special relationships and getting out of them, what I want you to understand is that It's going to be more than just reaching out to that which is beyond your present finite sense of things, your present sense or experience of suffering, that in one way or another you feel is illegitimate, even though you feel you have no justification for having any other kind of experience. When you reach outside and say, Father, what is the truth here? As I've said before, you're not going to get an intellectual answer. You're going to experience a shift of perception. And what that is going to mean is that you are going to shift from a body orientation, a body identification, to a mind identification. You will find yourself able to abandon the sense of you being inside a body, and specifically inside the head of a body. Right now, as we've talked about excessively, you think all of your conscious experiences are going on inside your skull, when the fact is that everything that you're having a conscious experience of is occurring in an infinite mind. And everything is at this moment, even though you are determining it to be matter, physical, everything is right now an idea being misperceived as a thing, as an object, as a hunk of matter. But it's an idea in mind, and it's you as mind experiencing all of these ideas, experiencing that which renders them visible and tangible without causing them to become matter, holding them still perfectly in their divine state as an idea in the mind of God, placed there, maintained there by God's constant attention to everything in his mind, everything in the mind that he is, and which therefore maintains it constantly in you as what you divinely are and always have been, even though you decided to take this vacation from reality and get a divorce, so to speak, from your father. This is important. And the reason it's important is because it makes it clear that it would be impossible to have a special relationship if you didn't believe that you were a body. Now, what does that do? It introduces something interesting, to say the least, because now you not only have the two-step that you can practice in order to promote the holy instant, in order to escape the illusion of being an orphan and find yourself in the place where God's laws prevail and nothing else does. You have another avenue. It performs the same function, but it's a different way to look at it that you might find helpful. You know, when I've talked about this mug, this glass, and the water in it, and the fact that it's an idea in mind, that it's absolutely non-material, absolutely spiritual, absolutely divine. And I have suggested that you look at it, or a vase of flowers, or a table, and ask, what is the more that is here of what God is being than I'm seeing? Isn't that the two-step? Isn't that reaching beyond whatever your current definition is? It isn't like you're saying, what is the truth here in this glass mug? What is the awesome truth of it? You might, in that approach, frighten yourself off because you are envisioning an excessive degree of spirituality or divinity because you are making it such a profound moment. And it can simply be a desire, a simple desire. What is the more of what God is being here than what I'm seeing? Now, understand that when you say that, you're opening yourself up to a shift from you as the definer of things, as a body having a mind, a brain, and sensory organs capable of sensing the glass. You're stepping beyond that, and you're moving into the arena of your mind, you might say. You're not trying to force your eyes to see something. You're not staring at the cup, at the mug, at the glass, at the water. With intensity, you have the glass, you see the water, you see the light reflecting off of it. But your attention has moved to your awareness. And you're feeling for, being sensitive to, a shift of perception that may go on in your mind. And there you are, shifting back from body identification to mind identification. Now, this is very practically helpful, because you have here a practice, and I know everyone loves practices, and practices can become habits, which aren't helpful. But you have a practice here, and you can use it with anything that your eyes fall upon at any moment in the day, as many times a day as you feel like it. And at the bottom line, it's an expression of curiosity, which is a pleasure to engage in. And you look at whatever you're seeing and ask, what is the more of what God is being right there than what I'm seeing? And then just be quiet and attentive, present with that thing. And as I've said before, absolutely every aspect of creation is conscious. Every aspect of creation has the capacity to communicate its meaning, the Father's meaning, the meaning the Father has embodied by means of the idea, which is experienceable, that you're looking at. It is eager. It is eager to have you once again not be blocked from the conscious experience of its meaning. As was the way you experienced it before you got your divorce, an experience you lost in that moment of commitment to an illusion with a brother or a sister. And so, whenever you ask this question, throughout the day or night. You ask, what is the more of what God is being right here than what I'm seeing? Whatever that thing is, it's rejoicing, because it knows you're bringing your attention to it in a way that you haven't for a very long time. Because always, for a very long time, you have overlaid its meaning with your meaning, with the definition you and a brother have made up and applied to it. And you have related to the picture you have projected on something real, and the reality of that thing has not been able to register itself with you by extending itself to you, because that's its function, the function that was placed in it by the Father, that was placed in every aspect of creation by the Father. Creation is living. Creation is alive. Creation is conscious. Creation is mind. It is therefore something to be profoundly experienced, because it is so full of meaning. Now, we will be talking about this more in the next few weeks, talking about how body identification gets in the way of your experiencing the reality of your being, which is that you are mind in which all forms are being experienced. You are the infiniteness in which all of creation bees. I was going to say resides, but all of creation lives dynamically, vitally, in that infinite mind that constitutes your being and is the presence of God. Now, going into the book, salvation lies in the simple fact that illusions are not fearful because they are not true. What are illusions? Illusions are definitions of things that you and other holy sons and daughters of God have defined arbitrarily and creatively in false ways, and then have committed to agree to those meanings and definitions. Those are illusions. They are definitions applied to things that are real and are present because God is present and presenting himself. Now, salvation lies in the simple fact that illusions are not fearful because they are not true. They but seem to be fearful to the extent to which you fail to recognize them for what they are. And you will fail to do this to the extent to which you want them to be true. They seem to be fearful to the extent to which you fail to recognize them for what they are. You are failing to recognize that they are fabrications of your imagination, and that they have nothing to do with what God is being right there. That's why they seem fearful. They seem fearful because you have applied definitions to them that are inconsistent with what they are. And therefore, I will say, their behavior, following the original impulse of the mind which has formed them and is being them, have not conformed to the definitions you've applied to them, and you have found yourself being injured in your relationship with them, or proven foolish by them. And so they seem fearful. You need to always be on guard to cover yourself when they don't quite behave according to the meanings and definitions of the mutual agreements of the orphans who have created them. And you will fail to recognize them for what they are, to the extent to which you want them to be true. To the extent that you want the illusions to be true, you will block the experience of what they truly are. And boy, you want your definitions of them to be true. Because to the degree that your definitions can be validated, you believe that you can end up validating yourself. And so from an ego-oriented standpoint, which is the only one you have as an orphan, you need your illusions to be dependable, to be faultless if possible, so that your integrity as an orphan can be absolutely defined. It's very important for these illusions. The false definitions that you have created to be true. And to the same extent, you are denying truth. In other words, you are denying what that thing actually is as God is being it, as an idea in this very moment. You're denying that. And to the same extent you are denying truth, and so are making yourself unable to make the simple choice between truth and illusion. If there is no difference between truth and illusion, there's no awareness of choice. There's no awareness of option. And if you have created a meaning for something, and in the creation of the meaning, you've even written a manual that explains how it works and what its purpose is. And you've written it very specifically and very intelligently and very logically so that no one can possibly misunderstand the perfectness of this creation of yours. It is going to be imperative that this illusion be real, that it truly is what you say it is. Else you are discredited. That's what it boils down to. And to the same extent, you are denying truth, and so are making yourself unable to make the simple choice between truth and illusion, God and fantasy. You see? The solution to all problems, or as it says here, salvation lies in your capacity to distinguish between truth and illusion, so that you may make the choice for truth. It seems to be much more complicated than that. It seems as though you have to, in your daily life, manipulate circumstances and people and mindsets, because they're all interlocked together in such complex ways that there can't possibly be a simple answer providing a solution to all of the problems locked in by the complexities. And yet, the complexities you have designed and developed so that you might have a creation that will give you great credit when it is proved to be incredible. Oh. Remember this. That the answer to all problems lies in the simple choice between truth and illusion. Remember this, and you will have no difficulty in perceiving the decision as just what it is, and nothing more. As a simple choice between truth and illusion. As a simple choice between being in a body, being a mind trapped even in a body, or being mind in which all experience of form is going on, because all forms are ideas which are perfectly tangible to the mind that formed them. That's the simplicity of it. The simplicity of it also is your hesitation and your silencing of your human will and your withdrawal from your commitment to the meanings you have applied to everything and confine yourselves to, and reaching beyond them and saying, Father, what is the truth here? What is your perspective about this glass and the water in it and the light reflecting off of it? What is the more of what you're being there than what I'm seeing? That's the way you make the choice, the simple choice between the only two choices there are, truth and illusion. And the fact that of the two choices, one is real and one is itself illusion, makes it even less complicated, makes it even simpler. The core of the separation delusion, you know, what we've called the human experience, the orphan experience. The core of the separation delusion lies simply in the fantasy of destruction of love's meaning. Now, of course, we've discussed the fact that the meaning of love can't be taught. But you can understand that love involves extension. Love involves giving. Here's a big clue. Your function as the son or daughter of God is to acknowledge what God is being, to join with him in recognition of his handiwork, of what it truly is, what its actual meaning is. Your function is to give acknowledgement. Your function is not to get anything. God's function is not to get anything. Getting is foreign to the divine equation of being. It's part of the illusion. The core of the separation delusion lies simply in the fantasy of destruction of love's meaning. And unless love's meaning is restored to you, you cannot know yourself who share its meaning. You see? Because sharing is not part of the equation of the orphan mentality. Even though in your divinity you share its meaning. That's your function. Separation. I'd rather do it my way, Father. I'd rather see it my way. I want a divorce. I'm getting a divorce. I have divorced you. Mary and I are joined now. We're taking charge of things. Oh, Separation is only the decision not to know yourself. It's the decision to forget that you're the son or daughter of God, and that you have an inheritance and a birthright, and that you're incapable of experiencing sin, disease, and death. It's your birthright to be free of them, transformed by what? Fixing up your body? No. Transformed by the renewing of your mind. Because it's all mind. You see? The very statement, transformed by the renewing of your mind, states the fact that all is mind. And that is where one must be from. As one embraces the world and universe. Separation is only the decision not to know yourself. Its whole thought system is a carefully contrived learning experience, designed, what? To lead away from truth and into fantasy. Yet for every learning that would hurt you, God offers you correction and complete escape from all its consequences. Now, again, what is this escape from? It's escape from all of the effects of special relationships. Relationships entered into in which any reference to a prior connection with your father is never spoken of. Where no connection of any sort with God is allowed the slightest entrance into the orphan mindset. Yet for every learning that would hurt you, God offers you correction and complete escape from all its consequences. The decision whether or not to listen to this course and follow it is but the choice between truth and illusion. Now, you could read this as though it were referring to this course, A Course in Miracles, but it is actually referring to a course of procedure, a course of action, where you're making a decision, you're making a choice between truth and illusion. The decision whether or not to listen to this course and follow it is but the choice between truth and illusion. For here is truth separated from illusion and not confused with it at all. And I would say, and not confused with it at all any more. I promise you that if you will engage in this practice of asking, what is the more of what God is being right there in that thing than what I'm experiencing, than what I'm seeing? What is the more of what it is as an idea in the mind of God? You are making a choice for truth. And you are abandoning commitment to tininess, your limits, your experience of suffering, sin, disease, and death. As you begin to get glimpses of the meaning the Father is embodying, that goes beyond your present sense of a thing, your present definition of a thing, the clarity you experience constitutes itself separation from the illusion, an invalidation of the illusion, something which makes the illusion not in the least bit interesting anymore. and gives you greater impetus to ask with further interest about everything, what is the more of this? What is the more of what God is being here than what I'm seeing? How simple does this choice become when it is perceived as only what it is? You see, it's just a choice between seeing what's real, what's true, and what isn't. It's not the complex choice of how am I going to get her to change her mind. She has her mindset. She grew up in a culture in which this wasn't allowed. Now she's living in a culture where it is allowed. It is going to be very difficult. You see, blah, blah, blah. And you argue yourself into a complexity that I promise you is an illusion. An illusion which you deserve to be free of. An illusion which we are uncovering the path out of. How simple does this choice become when it is perceived as only what it is? For only fantasies made confusion in choosing possible, and they are totally unreal. This year is thus the time to make the easiest decision that ever confronted you, and also the only one. You know, so you're confronted with a woman who grew up in a culture that disallows for things that are allowed in this culture, and which her not taking hold of and embracing is causing her difficulty in this new culture. And you say, this is very difficult, this is going to be impossible. Well, stop saying that. And instead say, what is the more of what God is being right here than what I'm presently seeing? You see? Abandon this little brain inside a body that you think is your abode, your dwelling, and your identity. Abandon that and ask beyond it. And then listen from beyond it. Listen for the answer in the mind that you are, that in which all of creation is being experienced by you right now, because you are infinite. And you are the mind in which the body is being experienced, rather than the body in which the mind resides. Very important, but very simple. A very simple, easy practice of curiosity. You will cross the bridge into reality simply because you will recognize that God is on the other side and nothing at all is here. It is impossible not to make the natural decision as this is realized. Now there's a lot to contemplate here. Simple, though. Not so simple that it does not deserve your consistent, disciplined practice of it frequently, because you are so committed to making and maintaining your definitions in order to prove your integrity and actual independent presence, you see. So, we will talk more about this. It's wonderful. bring it into play all week this week. And I look forward to being with you next week.